Let's pray, and we're going to finish up this morning what I wanted to do for our short series on money. Father, we pray your blessing upon us. I thank you, God, for your kindness and generosity in giving us a Savior. And we pray your blessing upon our lives as we serve you, that we would serve you faithfully in every area, that we would, as Paul encourages, abound even in this grace, the grace of giving. Help us to the end, I pray, in Jesus' name, amen. 2 Corinthians 8 is where we're going to start this morning. And I have two things that I want to do. One, I want to take some time, and I'd mention this. I try to do this periodically and just kind of talk to you about how we handle the offerings that come through. Nothing exciting, but I'm going to give you the basis of why we do it and then explain what we do, and you can kind of go from there. And then I want to talk to you a little bit about missions. And I'm really kind of introducing this. I'm going to try and consciously take some time through the end of the year and talk to us periodically about missions giving with the view towards when we start January of 2018, that everybody has thoughtfully and prayerfully looked at their missions giving and adjusted it as necessary. That part of it, that's between you and the Lord. I'm going to do what I think my responsibility is in that. So 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 16 through 24 is where I wish to begin our reading this morning. Second Corinthians chapter 8, verse number 16. But thanks be to God, which put the same earnest care into the heart of Titus for you. For indeed he accepted the exhortation, but being more forward of his own accord, he went unto you. And we have sent with him the brother, whose praise is in the gospel throughout all the churches, and not that only, but who was also chosen of the churches to travel with us with this grace, which is administered by us to the glory of the same Lord, and declaration of your ready mind, avoiding this, that no man should blame us in this abundance which is administered by us, providing for honest things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. And we have sent with them our brother, whom we have oftentimes proved diligent in many, many things, but now much more diligent upon the great confidence which I have in you. Whether any do inquire of Titus, he is my partner and fellow helper concerning you, or our brethren be inquired of, they are the messengers of the churches and the glory of Christ. Wherefore show ye to them, and before the churches, the proof of your love and of our boasting in your behalf. So, in this section, in 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, are consumed with an offering that was being taken among the primarily Gentile churches in Macedonia and Achaia, Europe, to be sent back to the church in Jerusalem. And of course, you can read about the great famine that was predicted in the book of Acts, and the church in Jerusalem is being tremendously persecuted, and part of that persecution is the impoverishment of God's people. And so the idea is that we're going to go to the other churches and take an offering, and this is going to form mutual ministry. These verses, the verses that we just read, are Paul's explanation to the Corinthians about the care with which he was handling this money. I mean, if you just think about it, folks, I mean, you know, we live in a world in which great efforts are made to keep our finances secure. And, of course, great efforts are made on the part of other people to get at them. So you have the, 143 million people who have been compromised through the Equifax hack, right? And, you know, lots of people are still very apprehensive about doing online transactions, worried about the security. Probably all of us know what it is to have our credit card hacked, credit card account hacked. Paul's world was virtually unprotected and untraceable. The only form of currency was Roman coins. And so when Paul is taking an offering from churches in Europe to send to Asia, he is gathering gold and silver coins and storing them somehow to get them physically delivered to the church at Jerusalem. Anybody would be reasonably apprehensive, right, that not all of that money might make it, and that the temptation would fall upon those who were entrusted with it to skim a portion off and have some missing. That's what Judas did, right? Judas Iscariot was the treasurer of the disciples, and he was a crook. And he was stealing money that came into the apostolic assembly. And Jesus knew that and gave him the bag anyway. But that doesn't mean that the pattern is that we find the most corrupt people we can and entrust them with the checkbook. That's not the way we should read that. All of that to get to particularly what I want is chapter 8 and verse number 21. Paul writes, providing for honest things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. So if I could summarize it this way, Paul is just saying we want to handle this well, not only in such a way that God is pleased, but so that men are comfortable. And one of the criticisms that oftentimes comes to churches, particularly smaller churches, you know, is that the handling of the church finances is all done under this shroud of secrecy and mystery. And I actually know a pastor who told me one time that he handles all of the money. Who do you need? Oh. Tony's obviously, this isn't the norm, so he's obviously doing business here. So, I mean, well, that didn't sound good, did it? That's on tape forever. Yeah, Tony's... talking about money, Tony's selling a couple of tickets to the next Cornhusker game. Discounting. By the way, I made a joke last week about the boat, which everybody found amusing, except the ladies who work for my wife, who went home and told her that since it was her boat, she could sell it when she wished. And no, she can't. And I'll talk to you about that later. You are not allowed to talk to her, Doug. You are not allowed to talk to her. And none of you, listen, you. So you look, when you ladies come to work, you just come to work and that's all you're going to do, okay? And, holy cow. All right, that had nothing to do with this. Well, it had a lot to do with this. I've been waiting 5 days to get access to you to talk to you about the important stuff. Handle it well in the sight of men. Anyway, I literally know a guy, and he's a good guy. But he said one time, I handle all the finances in the church. I collect the offerings and pay the bills, and they trust me with their souls. They should trust me with their money. And I would hope that you feel that you can trust me with your money. But as a part of that, I have as little to do with the money as I can possibly do, apart from kind of knowing whether or not we've got enough to pay the bills. Handle it well in the sight of men. So I want to take just a few minutes and kind of talk with you about what happens. Of course, we take an offering every service. When that money comes in, it all gets put into one main bank account, which if you look at the report back there, we call our general fund. We've been calling it that for, I don't know, however many years. So all of the money that you get in, and of course, when you look at the offering envelope, there are a variety of ways to designate it. I will, and by the way, this isn't in the notes, but I just want to make this observation just for your general information. We try always, always, always to distribute the money as you designate. So if you want it to go to missions, it goes to missions, and if you want it to go somewhere else, you know, and sometimes, you know, you've been on conversations where we're trying to clarify that. The federal government, by the way, just the government's position, just so you know, is that once you donate it, you lose all control over it. So that legally, the Internal Revenue Service says that any check written to Westwood Heights Baptist Church, once it comes into us, is entirely ours to use as however we wish. So that's the legality of it, and I'm just saying that so that you know that. And then we don't do that. Well, if you want money designated, we honor those designations. Okay. So from there, the next week, and this is part of what Kelly does, is those. So Whatever comes in today designated for missions will be dumped into the general fund, and then it will be transferred over to the missions account. The only thing that is different about that is we have always kept Omaha Baptist Academy money separate. And the reason for that is that tuition is not charitable. Tuition is a fee that you pay for a service that you receive. And I can't stop you from claiming your tuition on your taxes as part of what you give to the church. I can just tell you that it never shows up on your record that way, because that's not what it is. It's tuition, and we have always kept that separate. We ask folks, you know, when people come into the school, we always try to make a point of saying to them, please don't put your tuition into the offering plate. We want to make sure we keep that money always handled separately. So we provide you at the end of the year a little bit of an accounting of the academy. We have no secrets there, but that money is kept separately. And then we have, and I'm just mentioning this to you, because of the way we work with the academy and because of the way that we work in the church, we maintain a separate account for handling payroll. Pastor, secretary, custodial, that's all onto the church side of the budget, those salaries. So, and then the church, of course, puts in money to the school to help pay for the salaries, and then the rest of that is collected from tuition. So we blend them into a payroll account, and then everybody gets a paycheck from that account, and so that's the way that we handle that. Just for your information, so that you know, we endeavor to do all of that as uprightly and as legally as we can. We withhold taxes from everybody. The church pays their portion of the Social Security and the withholding taxes. We provide everybody with W-2 forms, and so you know, everybody gets treated, including myself. Everybody gets treated financially as an employee of a corporation. We get paychecks and. You get W-2 forms, and so we just, you know, we've been doing that for years, just, you know, want to operate, as Paul said, providing honest things in the sight of men. So we do have a small savings account. We call it the money market account. The bank that we have used for a number of years has recently been bought by another bank. And we just discovered in this last round of statements, Kelly was explaining to me, that every one of our accounts now receives some kind of interest payment. So we opened the money market account really to kind of hold money for building projects. As people would designate money for a building, we would put it in there and it would accumulate some interest. And for a number of years there, before we built the multi-purpose building, you know, when we were, as money would accrue, we would move it over there to get some interest. But so anyway, there's about $3,000 in it or something like that, where there's not much money in it now. And then we do have the separate missions account. The deacons, you know, if you look back in the office, they're back there, and the deacons are the guys counting the offerings on Sunday night, and we take it to the bank and put it in the night deposit. Two deacons have to sign the checks. Increasingly, just like your world, fewer and fewer checks are being written. More and more bills are being paid online. But, you know, I mean, from my standpoint, that's okay, because that's an easy paper trail. You can see where the money's going. And again, we really have no secrets. But whenever a check is signed to, the deacons have to sign them. The deacons count the money. You know, Kelly really does the bookkeeping and, you know, sees to it that all the bills are paid. I know about the finances broadly, but I really don't know about them individually. I try to stay out of that. When you get your year-end statement, you know, your tax statement, you know, from on the church stationery that says how much you gave, when I signed those, they're blank. I don't know how much money is put on there. That does leave me in this position, and again, this sometimes people express shock at this, but whenever there's a conversation about somebody teaching Sunday school or working in then some kind of a leadership position, since I don't know this stuff natively, one of the things I try and make sure I do is talk to the deacons about it, to make sure, because I just think it's important, folks, that people who are engaged in something that looks like a role model position are role models financially. So If people do not participate financially, needless to say, you know, it's going to kind of leave you out of the out of that loop. So, and that's kind of dicey. You know, we used to have a man, and he was a good guy, and he just I made mention one time that I had, you know, this was 8 or 9 years ago, and I had, you know, there were some things going on. You know, we were trying to do some things financially, and I was apprehensive, and I kind of looked to get a composite picture of what was going on. He was very offended that I had inquired into the personal giving of the people. But, folks, you can't have a leadership role if you're not leading in such a blatantly necessary area as finances. So understand that. Okay? And then, of course, every December we present to you a new budget. And we give you I try to give you at least a couple of weeks to look at the budget and to discuss the budget. We try to honor the budget. You know, some things, you know, we can budget for insurances, but, you know, we vote on a budget in December and our building insurance renews in February. If the premium goes up, we're going to pay it. We're not going to come back and, you know, we're going to pay the utility bills, whatever they are. So we try to be generous there. Some categories are more difficult than others. You get, again, when you get the proposed budget, you get the best information that we have at that time of how we have honored each category of that. And generally speaking, this is just, I mean, I don't know that we've ever formally made this an acceptable way of doing it, but this is what we do. Generally speaking, if an expense is in excess of $1,000, I'm going to talk to you about it and give you an opportunity to vote on it. If it's less than $1,000 and we think that it's, you know, we did the roof, we did the peak on the roof, you know, one of the things we didn't do was paint. And, you know, I talked to Skip about that, you know, and getting it painted. And, you know, I called the guy that painted the building a few years ago, and we got some painting, additional painting around the garage to do, and we got a price on that. You know, we're just kind of going to go with that. And then every month, of course, we post reports, which basically the report is, you know, every check that was written and who it was to and how much it was for. Those are posted in the copy room. And again, we're not trying to do that in secret. That's just, you know, kind of a sort of public place. And, you know, I don't want to plaster them up and down the walls of the hallway, but they're there. And anytime you have a question or concern about what we're doing financially, I want you to know about it. All right. I mean, this, at one level, it's all the Lord's money, but at the other level, it's money that you're giving, and I want you to be a part of what's going on financially in the church, to have some idea of how that works. Okay. So, that, any questions about that? How we spend the money, how we receive the money, and distribute the money, and disperse the money, and handle that? All right. Everybody just happy, happy, happy. Bored out of your head. Who cares? David. Sign my name on what?
On the reports at the end of the year that says this is how much, you know.
Well, we track people's checks, you know, what they give in the course of the year and whether it comes in check or cash, and then we just report that. I mean, that's for you to report to the IRS if you want to claim it on your taxes. That's all.
But
that's,
you're signing it saying that you verify. I would think that, you know, there was an audit and there was an error. You know, people make errors. Then somebody might come back.
Yeah, well, I mean, yes, and somebody could ask about that, and then I would do what I always do, which is go Kelly. I mean, seriously, and I mean, I think there's probably been a time or two, right, when somebody is, I mean, look, you're learning, right? You know, did you just, why bother coming to me? Okay? I mean, seriously, you're going to come to me, and I'm going to go, well, let's go down and talk to Kelly. I mean, this, so, you know, I don't know. Glenn, help us, because a lot of this has really been done under your direction, right? No. I mean, because you know, you were the one who said this is how we should handle it to the satisfaction to the IRS, that we should put it on church letterhead and write a report of how much the contributions were.
But I just think the person who audits that work to make sure it's all done correctly.
Well, I sign it as an officer of the corporation, so I guess if we're lying about it, I guess that would be on me. Well, I'm assuming that when you get that letter, you have some idea whether or not it's right. Right?
He's saying you're putting yourself at a point of liability when you don't know the answer.
Yes. I think Dave's got a point. I think Dave does have a point. That you're the one signing and saying, this is a correct number that we're giving you.
If you don't audit that.
You might want to rethink this.
Who should sign it?
I think
who should sign it? They're officers of the corporation.
I think Dave does have a point. I don't know, Glenn, maybe?
But I don't know that I agree with you yet.
Okay.
Because there are controls. I mean, he's relying on the system that got the beacons, you know, reporting it each week. And we've got the data.
I have a feeling that it'll come up in conversation on our end, and I don't want to put words in the deacons' mouths, but I can't imagine any of them being excited about the prospect of auditing a year's worth of giving records for everybody.
Can I do bring up one thing?
Yes. Right.
Where that money is actually going. I wonder if you couldn't improve on the transparency there.
Of reporting the credit card transactions?
Yeah, you at the end of the month you're sending $1,000 to the credit card company. You actually know who the vendors or the payees were and what where that money was expended.
Okay. I'll talk to Kelly about that. It shows where he categorized it. I think he wants to know about the vendors. He's asking about the vendors. So like Amazon.
But it should say like communications and the next to that Verizon cost. So are you saying show how much of that went to Verizon, how much went to cost? Is that what he's asking?
Yeah, essentially I am.
I don't know how you do that in the software.
Well, that's true. It would be a supplementary report.
I was going to say, it would almost have to be a... I'll talk to Kelly about that. We'll figure out if we can't come up with a way. It would be a separate report. It would be a separate, you know, credit card report. So,
lacking that, you don't have a great deal of transparency.
Right. Right. Well...
And then, can I bring up a different question?
Yes. Right.
You said we respect designation.
Yes.
But you have to place limits on that. I don't know what limitations the church has on it. But, you know, I can't just write a check and say send it to XYZ and you send it to XYZ without some limitations on it.
Okay. So Glenn is pointing out, if you can't hear him, that while I'm arguing we respect your designations, there has to be some limitation on that, you know.
Yes.
And let's keep it, yes, and I would agree with that. Let's keep it out of the realm of anything blatantly questionable ethically or morally, right? I mean, if you wrote a check for $50,000 and gave it to Westwood Heights and designated it for Joel Osteen Ministries, we would probably give you your check back, right? We would not want to participate in that.
Okay, so there are limitations, but are those limitations that articulated in any...
Those limitations have not in any way been articulated.
Right. And I suggest we do that. Right. Have something... We need to be careful in that area.
Okay.
Can you not just have a general statement like on the offering envelopes that says we have the right to do whatever we want?
Are you going to lunch tomorrow? We'll talk. We can talk about it at lunch, and you know, I don't know, Tony. I mean, quite honestly, we just buy pretty much pre-printed. You know, we buy the basic generic offering envelopes. You know, we don't use the coded numbering system or any of that kind of stuff. So I'm not saying we couldn't do that. I'm just saying I don't have any idea what would be involved in putting that kind of a disclaimer on there. I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to recall if I've ever been party to a conversation about a question along those lines. I don't know that I have, you know, that we've ever had anything requested to be given, you know, that would cause us to raise our eyebrows. I don't think we've ever had that. But as the world gets weirder and weirder, there's no, you know, so I'm not supposed to, you know, one of the things that has come up in conversations with folks has been, and I'm a little reluctant, I'm going to put it this way just to try and reduce it, boil it down to its essence. You know, I've had people that have basically said to me, you've been here over 30 years, we trust you, but what are we doing to protect ourselves when the next guy comes along? And so, you know, I think, you know, with reference to the deacons, we kind of labor under, we don't want to create layers and layers and layers of bureaucracy, you know, but neither do we want to leave the church vulnerable and, you know, to... Without some kind of a disclaimer to the... Okay. So, all right, so we'll go back and address that. Like I said, the Internal Revenue Service is very clear. When you give a gift to a charitable institution, you know, like, you know, if you send a check to the Red Cross, and I would not oppose you sending a check to the Red Cross, the Red Cross has its own discretion as to how to use that money. So, okay, anything else along those lines? Okay, I mean, because we do, folks. I mean, I would argue that we are under the biblical mandate to provide honest things, not just in the sight of the Lord, but in the sight of men, so that everybody understands that, you know, we take every effort to protect ourselves, to protect you, to protect the reputation of God. And I don't think you have to look around very far to realize that there have been lots of churches, some fundamental, some not in any way fundamental, who have fallen prey to bad financial practices. And I don't just mean borrowing money to build a building that you could never repay. I mean, you know, guy, I listen, you know, our school belongs to the American Association of Christian Schools. For a number of years, the American Association of Christian Schools had a guy. He had gotten saved. He was a finance guy. He handled their finance because you can contribute money. I've been doing it for years through their pension program, and he is now sitting in a federal penitentiary for bilking people out of their money. So you always want to take these things seriously. So let me move on here in the few minutes I have, just kind of because I want to raise this issue to you. Okay, with reference to the overall finances of Westwood Heights Baptist Church, we are these days in the wonderfully blessed position of taking in way more money than we need in our budget. And so, you know, we are casting about ways to wisely use this money so that we don't hoard it. But one place of which I am particularly concerned is our missions giving. And that functions separately, okay? So I'm not going to go back and revisit all of this, but we went in 1 Corinthians 9:14. We went back and built the whole argument that the tithe, you know, my position would be now that the New Testament Christian is as obligated to tithe to the local, his local church, as the Jew was to tithe to the temple. And that's what's being, you know, I mean, we talked about the principles behind it, the endorsement of Jesus, and what seems to me to be the clear teaching of 1 Corinthians 9:14. That just as it was the will of the Lord for the tithe to support the temple, it is the will of the Lord for the tithe to support the minister today. The question, and I confess that more than ever, I find myself questioning what the best way to fund missions is. My question would be then of myself, did Paul intend that to include missionaries? In other words, should the support of missionary work come from the tithe that is collected from God's people? Certainly, folks, I think we would all be comfortable in arguing that the pastor, particularly in a church like ours, where there's one pastor and many families, that I should not be the recipient of all the tithe money. That would just be catastrophic at so many levels. How should a church fund the work of missionaries when missions really is one of the major ministries of an assembly? And we talk about, I want to be involved in the ministry of the church. Well, folks, missions is the ministry of the church. So then the question becomes, how do we as individual members become involved in that ministry? We have for many years used a system that is called the Faith Promise System. It is developed out of the teaching in 2 Corinthians 8 and 9. And my concern with that is that 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 is not clearly missionary work as we would think of it. I mean, there's certainly an outreach component to it, but it is not necessarily, you know, the kind of money that Paul was using to start other churches. And the gist of the faith promise, right, if you're not familiar with it, is that you give some thought and some prayer to what the will of the Lord would be for you to give. You would commit yourself to that amount of missions giving, and then you would trust the Lord to meet the need, that you would make a promise based on faith, not a promise based on what you can see in your checkbook. And I think the concept is generally good. And again, it comes out of 2 Corinthians 8, and there where Paul talked about the Thessalonians who didn't, even though they were poor, gave above and beyond, and they gave first themselves, you know, and then they give, and they urged upon them the gift. And I would argue that is a great spirit to bring to giving. So here's my encouragement, okay? Because this, like I said, this is introductory. And I am totally comfortable. Let me give you my disclaimer. I am totally comfortable preaching to you Bible passages about money. Right? I mean, I've dealt with this a long time ago, and I worked through this. You know, when I became a pastor, a lot of pastors, you know, they would bring in a guy to preach on money. They didn't want to preach on money. And I just, that convicted me. And I just got to the place where I said, if I'm going to be the pastor of a church, anything that is said in the Bible is fair game. And more than fair game. Anything that God said, the expectation is if God said it in the Word, then I'm going to preach it to you. So I'm not embarrassed in any way to talk with you about money. I am a little bit more uncomfortable trying to give clear-cut shape as to how that would be. Okay? Obviously, preaching the tithe is not a problem. It really isn't a problem to me because I just find it so clearly taught in the Scriptures that, you know, anybody who fights it, they're the ones that has the problem in my opinion, if I can be so bold as to put it that way. But with something like this, how should we think about that? How should we think about the funding of missions? And I realize that lots of people, and I mean even within the Westwood Heights, I don't mean lots of people out in nowhere land, I mean here, have missionaries that they support individually and privately that we would not necessarily know about. So when I talk about your missions giving, I have no way of knowing really what that would look like unless you came to me and said, well, in addition to what I do to Westwood Heights, I do this, this, and this. And I don't want to know that. That's not my business. So if you're in that realm, you know, you're just going to have to take what I say and filter it for your particular situation. Okay? On the basis of 2 Corinthians 9:7, let me do encourage you this, to make it a matter of personal prayer and resolve to participate. Okay? Paul said, verses 6 and 7, 2 Corinthians 9, this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully, every man according as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. All right? So, as you sometimes hear say, and it's not a cliche, you cannot outgive God. I mean, you just cannot do that. And if you don't, I would argue that's not just true in this life, that's true in the life to come. We'll actually touch a little bit on that kind of philosophy tonight in the service. So I would ask you, I would encourage you, I would instruct you to make it a matter of personal prayer and resolve what your contribution would be with reference to the missionary program of Westwood Heights. And again, you're going to do that factoring in what your other involvements are. Right? If you have missionaries that you support privately or from other churches that you are involved in, obviously that's going to become a part of your composite picture. But I think, folks, this certainly falls into the realm that if we don't approach it deliberately, we're never going to do it accidentally. We're deceiving ourselves if we think that we, by not doing something consciously and deliberately, that someday we'll just fall into it and it will come into place. I don't think so. Secondly, I would argue that you should view it as a genuine offering to God. And this is the way in Philippians 4, 17 and 18 that Paul referred to the money that was being given to him in his labors by the Philippians. And again, I hope that we all understand the context of the entire letter of Philippians is that Paul is writing them a thank you letter. Thank you for supporting me in my missionary labors. And this is an offering. I have received this from you. It is money that came to Paul. And again, hard currency, coins. And it came to Paul, and he viewed it as an offering to God, a sweet-smelling sacrifice offered up to God. And that's what we are doing when we participate in missions work. And I'm comfortable arguing it as a separate offering because it is such a vital part of the life of a church. Missions is the ministry of a church. Right? There's no preaching the gospel to every creature without some mechanism in place to see to it that that is being done by the churches that do exist. Thirdly, I would encourage you to pray and resolve to make your giving to missions proportional. Proportional giving is virtually the only recognized form of giving that there is in the Bible. Now, there was the half-shekel offering that was paid by every Jew, whether they were rich or poor, everybody paid the same amount. And the sacrifices, but even many of the sacrifices had a proportional element to them. Give a calf, unless you're poor, give two turtle doves. But everything else is really hinged upon the proportion. And this is how Paul argues in 1 Corinthians 16:2, as the Lord has prospered. So my encouragement to you would be to be working towards. Because I just don't know where you are in the process, and I'm not trying to get there. I will say this, okay? I'm apprehensive about missions as a whole, right? We're meeting the missions budget, right? I mean, we're just barely over 8 months into 2017. Okay? If you pay attention to the financial report, we're 8 months into 2017 and we're almost $90,000 ahead of the budget in our general fund offerings. We're 8 months into 2017 and we're about $200 ahead on our general fund or of our mission offerings. So we're keeping our head above water, but not very far above water. And we don't really have as much latitude in our missions giving as we do in some other areas. I mean, I hope we're never in a position where we've got to send a guy an email and go, we are terribly sorry, but you're not going to get a check this month. So this is something that is really of concern to me. And I don't mean in any way to suggest that you're not faithful, generous people. I'm just asking you to look at this and to participate. And I know where we are, and I know that some people carry a very high percentage even of the load of missions money that comes in. I just know that. And again, I don't know what you do privately. I don't know what you do individually. So I'm really not trying to be critical of that. I just know that out of the money that does come in for missions, a very large portion of that is given by a very small segment of us. So I would ask you to really think about it and pray about it and to view it as it truly is a necessary part of the life of an assembly and something that we would view as part of our proportional giving. In other words, if we're giving a tithe to the Lord, 10%, I would argue that you should set, and it's probably going to be a bit of a long-term goal for a portion to go to missions. I mean, wouldn't it be wonderful if for every dollar that we took in general fund, we took in, say, 50 cents to missions, so that we just all ended up in the place. And again, I realize that there are a variety of things there, but where we said, okay, Lord, this is going to be my goal, that 10% tithe, 5% missions. So this would just be the way that I would encourage you to do it. And I would resolve furthermore, because to help us to think of it rightly, to make it a proportion of your tithe or to tie it to some personal expense. And, you know, again, I'm really a little bit reluctant here. I don't like to talk about these things, and I certainly don't like to put myself, you know, out in there. But, you know, many, many years ago, I just came to the conviction that my missions giving was going to be significant enough that it was going to reflect some material thing that I, you know, was tied to, that I wasn't, you know, I could not live with my own conscience to spend money on this item and this item on this item and, you know, have these large purchases and have very small amounts given to missions. So that was just kind of what I did. And I think it's important. And again, folks, I mean, you know, I think it's what a church ought to do. You know, we don't keep a cut of it. You know, it's not like building Westwood Heights offerings by taking missions money, because we spend all of that plus, and we're always looking for opportunities to do that. So let me encourage you, like I said, I'm going to spend the rest of the year doing that. I mean, and it just worked out. I mean, we have Brother Schwalbe coming next Sunday night, October 1st. Jeremiah's dad, our missionary to Poland, Mike Peterson and his family will be here presenting the work. You know, I want to try and keep it in front of us, and I'm just asking you to be thinking about it, to make it a matter of prayer, and to look at that towards that.